the Chronic Life Podcast, where life is lived well. And now your hosts, Dr. Kevin Payne and Don Peterson.
Welcome to the Chronic Life Podcast. So with us this morning is Danielle Ripley Burgess. And we're going to talk today about her story a little bit, right?
Right.
Or maybe a lot. So we asked Danielle to come on today to talk a little bit about her story. Danielle is a cancer survivor twice now, right?
Yep.
Originally diagnosed when you were 17?
17.
I got that right?
Yep.
And in the wake of all of that, or subsequent to all of that, she has committed most of her life since then to really helping people, other people, with dealing and coping with what she's been through. And I couldn't think of a better person to bring on who could tell the story of what it means. I want to, you know, in honor, I mean, Kevin's got MS, and so, you know, his story is very relatable too. Danielle's is just different. And, you know, as Kevin's condition progresses as being a chronic disease, his story will continue to unfold. And in Danielle's case, your story's already unfolded in many ways. And yet, of course, you live with that diagnosis probably all your life, right? And
then right.
You learn to cope with it. What this podcast is about and has been about from the beginning is hoping that we can identify mechanisms and mindful ways to cope with the conditions that afflict people either as a chronic disease or episodic. And in Danielle's case, I think she's got some very interesting things that we hope she'll share with us. So, Kevin, when we talk about coping, right, we've covered a lot of ground with relationships and, you know, your energy levels and fatigue and things like that. From your perspective with regard to Danielle's background, what is uniquely different? Maybe you could introduce, you know, sort of the unique differences between, you know, your chronic condition and what other people deal with and a cancer diagnosis.
I don't know that there is a lot of difference. You know, I spent many years as a caregiver for someone with cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I spent a decade going through that with my then wife. Even if you know, in my experience, not just personally, but with people that my company has helped and so forth, even if the medical establishment pronounces you cured from your cancer, you're still living with it.
Right, very much so.
Well, let's talk about your journey and let's talk about some of the things that you've been doing. You have a website, DanielleRipleyBurgess.com.
I do.
And it's an awesome website.
Thank you.
There are many great things on there, stories. And what I love about Danielle, and I met Danielle 6 or 7 years ago, I think it was 2012, just before I started Infusion Express.
Mm-hmm.
I was babysitting a practice where I think your gastroenterologist was the lead physician.
Correct.
Right?
Yep. Still is.
Yeah.
My GI. Yep.
Yeah. And we converged on what I think you were doing marketing for the practice at that time.
Correct.
Right. Now, were you in between your first episode and your second episode at that time?
At that time, I was a few years post my second diagnosis.
Okay, okay.
And so I was diagnosed with my first case of colon cancer when I was 17, and then I was diagnosed with my second case at 25. And so that was a few years after I had turned 25. I don't think I was almost 30. I think I was 29 when we met.
Really?
28 or 29.
See, this is what's remarkable about Danielle. In fact, I told her before we started the episode today that she doesn't change. She still looks 17 or 25, or I guess 17 is probably too young, but
I still get carded a lot.
You should. You should. I would be suspect if you told me.
Yeah,
seriously. But she's such an accomplished person. I mean, she's an award-winning communications and marketing person. She's authored a number of articles, and you write, is it weekly?
I do. Yeah, I do. I do my blog, and then I have weekly emails that go out called the Monday Morning Survival Guide every Monday morning, where I encourage people who've signed up for my emails. And then I am working on building up my list of places I guest blog and guest write for.
And these are all on your website?
These are on my website, yeah.
Okay, because I think it's, I call them, to me, they're inspirational. your survival guide, mm-hmm. are really more you survive because you've inspired people to have the kind of outlook I think you have. Mm-hmm. I think the other day I said to Danielle, where one of the questions I'm going to ask you is, why are you so different? And she challenged me on that because she said, well, different from what, or different than what? And I thought, well, that's a fair question. And I thought about it and I said, because you're the person that I would have thought, if you were a penny, you would be a little tarnished and maybe raggedy around the edges from what you've been through. And yet you're the shiny new penny that you happen upon very rarely. And so just your aura about you, the way you carry yourself, is remarkable and inspiring. So how have you dealt with all this and yet come out of it with a smile on your face? I know you don't sleep with a hanger in your mouth, so I assume it's natural and organic.
I like to tell survivors of any disease that there are high points and low points, I guess, to sound cliche, but it's very true. And one thing I tell people as well is a lot of the cliche sayings are actually really true.
And they're cliches for a reason.
Yeah, we don't like them, but there's a lot of truth packed into them. And so, you know, I haven't always probably been the shiny penny of some sort. I think after my second diagnosis, I was really angry and I was really mad. You know, there's still days where I don't want to say anything. I don't feel like writing anything. I need the encouragement personally. What do I have to offer other people to encourage mm-hmm. them? And it was a big leap of faith really to put my website out there and say I would do a Monday morning survival guide, because I thought, well, now people are signing up and every morning I need to stick to what I do. What if I don't have anything? And I think that's a very real side of anybody you see out there encouraging other people and offering hope is, you know, I don't just wake up and I'm flooded with it every day. But I have taken really intentional steps in my life over the past 18 years as a survivor to get in touch with processing what I've been through, identifying what I need, becoming as aware as I can, getting help around me, getting support. I think all of that has led up to the outlook I have and the attitude I attempt to maintain.
Well, and you're not only a cancer survivor. Right. You're a mom, mm-hmm. you're a wife, married to a wonderful guy, Mike, mm-hmm. right, who I've met, and you've had his support. I mean, obviously, you know, he's been through part of this journey mm-hmm. with you.
Yeah.
Unless you were married at 17. I don't presume you were.
Well, we weren't, but we were dating. So he's throughout the whole story. Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
And May, your daughter,
May,
is she, how old is she now?
She's 8 and a half.
That's incredible.
Going
so
on 18.
Soon you'll have a teenager to deal with.
Yes. You know, it's crazy. Kids age sooner these days. So I find her going through things that I didn't think about or go through until I was much older than she is. So the challenge.
Is it social media? I don't know. We blame social media for everything.
I don't know.
Wait till she really becomes a teenager.
Oh, gosh, people keep telling me that.
Mine are almost 18 and 16.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I'm bracing myself. But we have a lot of fun. You know, the beauty of her being exposed to things sooner than I was that because she's so young, she'll still talk to me about it. And so we've been able to talk about a lot. And not only do we talk about things she sees out there, but she's had a mom with cancer. And so all her life she's known, you know, we talk about hard things at home. She's adopted. She's mm-hmm. biracial. I'm a cancer survivor. So this bubble of her growing up, not exposed to some of the realities of the world is just not an option for her, which I hope and pray is to her benefit because she's learning how to see these hard things and process them young instead of being hit with it much older.
You know, that's a really interesting thing that I'd like you to talk more about, you know, reflecting on being a mother and how your daughter deals with you being a cancer survivor. I know, you know, in my own background, my kids were about her age mm-hmm. when their mother's cancer came to a head.
Yeah, it's been interesting. So she's adopted because I became infertile as part of my cancer treatment, even at 17. So we always knew that was part of our path. And that's part of her story of how she made her way to our home is we like to say, you know, everything really did work out. And it's always a really sobering thing to me that our birth mom's, one of her hardest days became the answer to my prayers. I mean, mm-hmm. it's kind of mind boggling to think that what was horrible for one person became the best day ever for me. And, you know, I think we try to parent with that in mind, really open-handed, as far as there's always going to be bad stuff and hard stuff that happens. And some of that we've talked about with her, and some of it we haven't yet because she's only 8. But, you know, I guess for me, I always try and find the good and the light in everything. And I think I've been that person. I was this person before I was diagnosed, and a big faith, a strong faith. And I think that has driven me. It's driven me through cancer. It's driven me through adoption and parenting, through hard things. I believe there's always good to be found, and you have to choose to want to find it. And a lot of people struggle to choose to find it. Now, on my worst days, is it easy to find that? No. So I try and be real with that. But I believe there's always that good to be found, and that's what I try and teach her.
And I think, to your question, Dawn, that'll be a great thing for us to dig into in the next segment, because you've mentioned a couple of aspects to mindset and finding meaning in life that are really crucial to being that shiny penny.
And I think that's what we should do, is take a little break and come on back. And when we do, we can follow up on that topic.
We all have challenges. Mine is multiple sclerosis. We each have this one life, and we didn't choose to be saddled with chronic illness. But there's a better way. So I choose to just jump. And you can too. It's your life. Live it well. ChronicCal.com.
And this is Dr. Kevin Payne with Don Peterson and our guest, Danielle Ripley-Burgess. We're going to keep talking a bit here about why you have such a great attitude toward things. And one of the first things that you acknowledged, and something that you know, I know myself from personal experience, is no matter how good your attitude, it's not always sweetness and light.
Right.
and there's, especially if you're out there trying to help other people mm-hmm. with this, there's a lot of imposter syndrome
yeah.
that sometimes goes on. Uh-huh. And sometimes you feel guilty and regretful that you're not at your peak all the time. But you do. Your story demonstrates a lot of resilience and grit. And those are two.
Yeah. Arr, I should grunt at the word grit.
Please do. You know, I'm a pirate sometimes. So
don't. Yeah. But we open that door.
Yeah, we won't go there. But those are the technical names that we tend to use for those things. And those are two characteristics that your story really demonstrates, and that we find shared among people who successfully deal with these sorts of challenges. Mm. So, and you can kind of break that out into being hopeful
mm-hmm.
and not a Pollyanna-ish sort of hope that is completely unrealistic, mm-hmm. but you know, a confidence that you're going to find something good as you keep going forward,
right.
even in the midst of all the bad.
Right.
You also show some creativity in finding resources and using those resources, even when we don't feel like we may have much mm-hmm. at our disposal. You have a really well-developed sense of meaning in the world, and meaning and purpose is a great fuel. You know, for some people, it might be, say, religion. For other people, it may be family.
Mm-hmm.
It may be, but it's connecting ourselves to something bigger
mm-hmm.
than what we are. And you also show flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's just to kind of outline it for our listeners. Those are the kinds of values that you're demonstrating. How do you find those things for yourself?
Well, thank you for all those compliments. That was really nice. It is funny when you're in it, you just don't always see it. I think that, yeah, definitely those points of meaning. It's been a constant question on my life. I think with any survivor, you wonder why are you in a position to survive something? And then when you do indeed come out on the other side, you wonder why you made it. And particularly in my community over the past especially for the past 10 or 15 years, I've lost a lot of friends who haven't made it. And it does make me go, well, you know, why did I survive? Mm-hmm. And so the quest to find meaning in it is never ending. It's a daily question for me. And a lot of that meaning has come from matters of faith. To me, that is a place where hope is defined, you know, so I think definitely, you know, religion, faith, just the ponderings of life and God and why are we all here? Mm-hmm. A lot of people have their answers and I have found mine, and that belief that I carry is what has made me get out of bed on those days where I don't want to and send the email on Monday when I really don't think I have anything to give. That's probably the biggest source of where this comes from. Within that, definitely family, friends. You know, I have found the joy in the little things. I love baking cookies, and M&Ms bring me immense joy. And sometimes, you know, that's enough for me. I mean, it's the small things. You know, sometimes people get to the very top and they have everything to realize that what matters the most are the small things. I've never been in a position to get to the top of life and realize that. For me, I had almost everything taken away and realized, man, what's almost been taken away is what it is. And, you know, the older I get, the more fortunate I feel to have gone through that at 17. And people look at me and they're like, how did you face these things at 17? And it's funny, I'm in the midst of writing my story right now. I'm working on my memoir that talks about it. And I actually had a moment a few nights ago where I was writing through being told I first had cancer. And I, like, you know, I was writing through the moment of standing in the library and my parents coming to tell me. And so I write through their emotion and where I was, and I write through what I think it felt like for them. And then I write through what it felt like for me. And I was standing there numb. Like, I don't know what to think. I've never heard this word before. Like, is this scary? Is this a big deal? Like, can I go call my boyfriend now? Mm-hmm. And it was really odd to be 35 writing this and feeling it, probably with the adult mindset of, oh my gosh, this is what people for 18 years have looked at me and said, this is what you would have experienced. How did you make it at 17? And I couldn't. And so I'm starting to see there's actually a lot of virtue in being that young, because I haven't known any other way.
You know, I think that is a remarkable insight, because, you know, in contrast, I wasn't diagnosed with MS until my 30s. Mm. I went through the worst part of that journey with my wife's cancer, and it took about a decade. Mm-hmm. There, you know, in our 30s. And a lot of people won't get this, but I know some will. If I could have gone through that in my early 20s, mm-hmm. I think I would have been a much better person now.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Rather than having to wait that long.
Wait. Better?
Yeah.
In better. What way? How would you describe betterment of having been diagnosed earlier?
Because when you are faced with that sort of thing, you learn that sort of resilience and grit in practical terms that can't be explained to you from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, I mean, I was born a relatively privileged white guy from the suburbs, and looking back on it, I thought I had been tested by life,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't realize until I was much older that I hadn't really been tested, you know, and I didn't really mm-hmm. have all the skills mm-hmm. that I thought I had.
Yeah.
And they came later and they came harder.
But that's, I think, what we're here for.
Yeah,
right?
It is.
Is to illuminate for our audience those things that dawn on us, not us, you guys, when you went through this journey. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really what we're here to talk about is, and I think that's what the audience is most interested in, quite frankly. And I'm sitting here, I'm inspired by both of you listening to this. Because we're actually surfacing things that Kevin and I, we have not talked about before.
No, we never have.
Danielle is, you're the cat.
Am I bringing them out?
No, but I just, what you said about, you know, being grateful that you had gone through it at such an early age, you know, that really resonated mm-hmm. with me. Mm-hmm. And it was like, if I could, you know, I would probably prefer not to have had to have gone through any of this stuff.
Right.
But given that it's part of my life, it would have been better if I was younger.
But this is, yeah. I think this is the manifestation of what you said earlier, where you said you find a way to take something positive mm-hmm. from whatever's going on, mm-hmm. right? And I think that, you know, business people, as a business person, I try to do that. There are failures. Failure is just part of the process. You know, you stumble, you fall, you get up, right? Mm-hmm. And it's expected. And yet, I was telling somebody the other day, I'm mentoring this young company, and the entrepreneur was telling me about a big sales success they had, but yet they still failed some other things that they were working on. And I said, you're going to learn a lot more from your failures than you are from your successes.
Right.
You just will. Mm-hmm. And you need to take the time to do those analyses after the fact. And when good things happen, that's what you were aiming for, mm-hmm. right? Well, you assume that's what you were trying to do. Mm-hmm. So in some respects, you're celebrating that whatever you were trying to do actually happened. Well, okay, that's worthy of celebration. But when it goes off the rails and doesn't happen the way you were hoping it would or expecting it to, you need to parse that apart and say, why not?
Right.
And where you learn. It really is.
And you know, Don brings up a really crucial point here, and it kind of speaks to your mentioning of the imposter syndrome that I totally mm-hmm. you know, get, and that is a lot of people misunderstand the idea of resilience, and they think that, you know, you're going to be up and you're going to be a shiny penny and you're going to bounce, and that's not what it is. Real resilience is what happens after life breaks you.
Mm. Wow.
It's how you respond to that.
Mm-hmm.
And how you build yourself back up. I'm okay admitting life has just broken me on more than one occasion.
Yeah.
And I didn't think there was any way through it. Mm-hmm. And I'll bet you can, you know, mm-hmm. you can feel, I bet you have been there too.
Yeah. And, you know, I think too, you know, illness is rarely isolated. So, you know, in writing my story, I'm not just having to write, I got cancer at 17. This is horrific. I'm writing, you know what, to be honest with you guys, my parents were in the middle of World War III. I mean, home wasn't safe. And I was embarrassed about my body, not just because it was bleeding, blood in the stool, but because I'd just been through puberty and I wasn't one of the hot girls in school. And I was embarrassed about how I looked and didn't know who to talk to. And so, you know, there's often many things connected to, you know, your illness. I think a lot of people think, particularly when you get sick from something and you do get to that cure, oh, things will be better now. And then the new normal is a popular word where survivors kind of panic because you get through treatment and then you arrive on the other side and then life wasn't as it was before. And so you have to come up with a new normal. But I even think the new normal is missing something, because if you go through illness and you're one of the people who even get to be cured or in remission or whatever that looks like, and you haven't fully acknowledged, though, that in your life, the only hard thing you likely haven't faced is getting sick in some way. It's probably family dynamics, disappointments, like all of that ties into it. And it's usually way bigger than people think. And I think that's part of imposter syndrome, is that's reality for me. So I still have to deal with loss of fertility, family issues. I'm in a blended family now. And it's really easy to look at people when you're not in their shoes and either judge them and look poorly on them or put them on this pedestal of, oh, they're a survivor, they've gotten through this. And I think if life's taught me anything, like the more I can just see each person as an individual and they've gone through individual things, the easier it is for me to accept that in myself too.
But I think that's why I find you just naturally and organically inspiring. You know, despite the challenges that you and your body have faced, you have a successful marriage. You made a proactive decision to adopt a biracial child that would represent its own challenges, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you integrated that into a life that was already challenging for you. Yet, look at you. I mean, you're the shiny penny. And that's inspiring all by itself.
Well, really, and is. I think one of the things that, you know, you brought up a couple of really important points that I want to reinforce for our listeners. Mm. And the first one is this condition, whatever it is that you're facing, doesn't happen in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
We get this mistake, you know, when you get sick, like with the flu or a cold or something like that, we're used to this idea that life's going to stop around us and let us hit pause for a few days or however long it takes,
mm-hmm.
and then you're gonna deal with that and then get back to life.
Mm-hmm.
And so people carry that same misconception into chronic illness.
Mm.
But we can't afford to stop our lives. Our lives are still going on around us, so this adds just another layer of challenge and complication to everything else that's going on. And the other thing that you mentioned that's really crucial is there is no getting over this stuff. It is a matter of learning how to move through it and keep moving mm-hmm. as you go on.
You know, this, all the things you guys are talking about, I'm sitting here as a person who has been so fortunate to have good health all my life, and I'm 64, and I still feel, I mean, in my brain, I think I'm 34, which my wife would rather I grew the hell up. But
don't.
You know, I know, right? But from a physical perspective, I feel much younger than I actually am. And, you know, it's been a lot of hard work to stay that way. But the things that you guys are talking about are so applicable to all of life. And the fact that you find it fortunate that having been through what you've been through has surfaced those things for you. And those are the things you hang on to, I think is what is remarkable. Because I think we have all had challenges, but not the acute level of challenge that you guys have been through. And so what you've been through is really almost a, you know, superset of what everybody else goes through in their lives. But I think that the way you project yourselves, the way you've handled that, is actually applicable to everybody in their regular lives as well.
Mm-hmm.
So when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about Kevin's notion of plan A, B, and C. And we talk a lot about being tired and fatigued and things like that. And I guess what I'd like to do, if you don't mind, Danielle, is talk a little bit about your plan A days and plan B days and plan C days. Because you say that there are days you get up and you really mm-hmm. don't want to write. You mm-hmm. really don't feel like you have a lot of positive things to say. And I'm guessing the challenge that you go through in your brain is, I want to project something positive, but I'm not in the positive space right now.
Mm-hmm.
So what's going to come out of my writing is going to reflect my current mood. So until my mood shifts, I probably shouldn't be writing anything.
Right. Right? And, or at least making it public.
Yeah, well, yeah. But I'm wondering, and we'll come back and we'll talk about this, but I'm wondering, you know, when you think about purpose-driven, and you clearly both have an incredible sense of that, is the writing for you, Danielle, is it a form of catharsis? Or do you feel more like it's a obligation or some responsibility to share because of that survivor syndrome? And I want to, what motivates you to be doing the things you're doing? Because aside from the fact that you're doing it, the thought of doing it is inspiring by itself. And I really want to get down to the sort of nub of that and say, what really is it that's driving that? Okay. So when we come back, we'll take a deeper dive on what really is inside that engine fueling it.
We all have challenges. Mine is multiple sclerosis. We each have this one life, and we didn't choose to be saddled with chronic illness. But there's a better way. So I choose to just jump. And you can too. It's your life. Live it well. ChronicCal.com.
Welcome back. We were talking about Kevin's analysis of his various days, or the variability between days. And in previous episodes, we've called them days A, or plan A, B, and C days, right? Plan A day, plan B, and C. So maybe, Kevin, just sure. for Danielle's benefit and for the audience, reframe that plan A through C thing.
Sure. One of the things that I always find is having the chronic condition And not just the condition itself, but all the distress and dysfunction that kind of comes along with it, or the aftermath of it. Because, you know, even if you have been, quote unquote, cured of cancer, there's still just a maelstrom of what ifs and possibilities and psychological and emotional issues and practical things that come in the wake of it. So what I found in my case is that everybody has their plan A, you know? Mm-hmm. This is what we want to get done for that day or that task, and we'd be really delighted with it. And most people have their plan Bs, which is, okay, this is my backup if everything doesn't go the way that I dream that it will.
Mm-hmm.
I have a plan C for everything, and that is when everything becomes so overwhelming, here is the minimum I can do that I can pretty well guarantee can be accomplished even under worst-case circumstances. Here's the thing that I can do so that I can come out with it with a demonstrable positive, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's the very least, because what people have to remember is that when we do things, it's not just about doing them. It's not about getting things done. It's also about the messages that you send yourself and that you send other people around you by the things that you do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's what Don is alluding to there. And you have to be flexible is right. What it amounts to. And so I think that's a way of us framing for you, how does that flexibility work in your own life? Because you obviously demonstrate that.
That's helpful. I'm processing everything you said. I don't think I've consciously probably thought, okay, today I have plan A and then if plan B and C, although I probably do it unconsciously.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think for me, I start probably with plan C. And so if I cannot function today because I can't leave the house from bowel issues, mm-hmm. tired, I can't do it. I can't meet these obligations, then alone time, nap, bed, prayers, usually plan C. I can count on that. That's where I can go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I've identified the triggers. Okay, I need to go there when probably what's more in plan A and B isn't appearing to happen. So I don't know. That's kind of a hard question. So one thing I've noticed, part of why sometimes it's hard, is I'm a planner by nature. But one thing I've noticed is that my survivorship sometimes makes it hard to plan, because what if those plans need to change? And so it's probably something very fluid happening in my mind every day of, you know, to be in a situation where one day you think you're fine and the next day you're told you have a life-threatening illness, all of the sudden that does something with how you look ahead. And so I think even over 18 years, I struggle to look too far ahead, whether that's an hour or a few days or a few years, like the 5 years, where do you see yourself in 5 years? Forever. I used to tell people, like, I hope I'm alive. Like I said that in my first job interview. Part of my healing has probably been being more open to planning my own life and saying, okay, today, because bringing in the idea of a plan B is also accepting that something might defeat me to the point I have to go from A to B, and that's sometimes a hard bridge for me to make. But what I'm trying to do is be more aware as the day goes on, like, what can and can't I do right now? Where do I need to ask for some help? And what's a must-have and what's a nice-to-have? And mm-hmm. that's probably my process.
The reason I came up with the plan C was because the alternative to plan C is nothing.
Mm.
And you know that if you string some of those nothing days together for a while, it becomes really crushing.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the very least, it's not a nothing day. It's mm-hmm. a something day.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be, you know, as you do, you know, it may be a day where it's focusing on the meaning and centering yourself and finding your own resources and connecting with something that's larger than you. Because that's something valuable that you can take out of the day and you can take forward with you. You know, for me, meditation is absolutely a non-negotiable part of every day for me. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm sure I get some of the similar things mm-hmm. out of it.
Yeah.
Let's spend a few minutes talking about something, Danielle, that you've mentioned now multiple times in the course of this conversation. Prayer, faith.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're a Christian,
mm-hmm.
and when you're having a Plan C day, the things that you rattle off are, you know, I'm going to go back to bed, and mm-hmm. I'm going to pray.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us how your faith has helped you, or how it changes your perspective or shifts your perspective when challenges occur.
Sure. So none of this makes sense to me without faith, which might sound weird because faith is believing in what you cannot see.
Well, and
sometimes what you can't prove. Right, but
some people who've been through difficult things like this, they're mad at God, right?
Yeah, and that's a very fair place to be. I think I've been there a lot. You know, I didn't get to this place without letting myself be really mad at God.
Okay.
And it took getting my anger out, admitting, I cannot believe you let this happen to me, not even once, but twice. I mean, my second diagnosis, I thought after my first diagnosis, I had felt in my heart, you know, I felt like I heard him tell me, you're never going to get sick again. And there I was facing diagnosis number two. And I thought, one, I don't even know if I believe this anymore. I don't even think I can hear God if he's real. And then how could a good God let something this bad happen to me? And yeah. I carried that with me for a long time. Now, I was raised in the church and it was always irreverent to even think about that kind of stuff or say that. I mean, yeah. How could you dare?
Well, just vocalizing it now.
Yeah.
I can see your...
It's like, oh, should I say this?
Your shoulders are a little tighter. I could see that.
But it's true. And you know, what I have found, for me, the reason that you see me write about faith a lot, you know, I don't plaster religion, I don't plaster Christianity,
right. Yeah.
is because the most real sense of what is faith, what is God, is he real? It has come through these moments of total honesty and transparency, and he's met me in that place. And Christianity is built on the belief that this unimaginable thing happened where God made himself human and also suffered. And it was a pivotal moment for me when I had the thought that maybe you're not causing all of this pain, but perhaps you know, God, if this whole Jesus thing was real, he could have come and not suffered. Like if he was God,
right.
like he could have come and like had a really cushy life.
Just preach.
He
right?
could have. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. But for some reason within that story is wrapped up this pain, suffering, abuse, trial, abandonment, rejection. And in those places in my life, I really need somebody to look up to who I can go, man, they know what it feels like too.
Yeah.
And in some of those thoughts, they started to override the anger, and it didn't take it away necessarily, but I realized that like God could take me being angry, and he actually invited that conversation so that I could get to the other side and see like my faith is not in an unrelatable being. My faith happens to be in this very defined path. And to me, that's the why. Like,
yeah,
that's how the penny's so shiny. Now it's not shiny every day, but I really, that's what keeps me going.
You have on your website devotionals,
mm-hmm.
right? Faith that survives.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean to you? What do those mean to you? Are you writing to yourself? In some respects, are you?
Yeah, a lot of times I picture an older version of myself and write to what I needed back then.
Mm-hmm.
I had a really powerful dream I woke up from in October, and I was actually going to a writer's conference over the weekend and, you know, wrestling with purpose. What should I write about? What direction should I go? And I had this dream where I was on a school bus and I was back to being 17, and I stood up on the bus and I looked around and I yelled out, who else here has had cancer? And no, wait, I was the age I am now, and everyone else on the bus wasn't still in high school. And half of them raised their hand. And I remember looking around on the bus going, oh my gosh, like I'm not the only one anymore. And then I sat down in the booth, and then it just, it was this overwhelming sense, like this small whisper voice of like, you need to help them, because I've been oddly prepared to where I'm in a position. I'm not going to be the only one in my age demographic that's a cancer survivor for much longer. And I could either choose to see this diagnosis and see my faith as being angry at God. How could he let this happen? I'm going to turn my back on this and define my own way. Or I could actually open myself up to, there's some things I won't know until the end of my life where I believe things will make sense. I can accept that bad things have happened, and my attitude is transformed when I can accept that maybe they happened to me so that I could get through this and help other people, because they're going to start happening to other people, and I can help them get through it and take this message to them. And in that perspective, I just became a leader and chosen for a really cool thing. And that makes me happy.
Well, and that's an amazing level of empathy, right? And compassion. The dream is a remarkable story, but it sounds to me like the dream, your subconscious was really reinforcing what you were already doing, saying you're doing the right thing, right? Your purpose, as you see it, to share as you have, as openly and transparently as you do, has become your purpose. And that dream sounded like maybe God's way of saying, you're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Keep
you
it
know,
up.
That dream drove my website. So before that last fall, I had a blog, like a lot of bloggers start with, like on WordPress.com, and just, it was random. And after last fall, I went, and my husband happens to build websites, so I said, hey, I need a website. And that helped give me the confidence to say, okay, my message is faith that survives. And it's, you know, even when our bodies fail us, our faith can survive. And I did a lot of patient advocacy for about 5 years, and I loved it. Did a lot of work in screening and prevention and education. And while I'm still passionate about that, the reality is that even if somebody's aware, you know, even if somebody has the best treatment or is getting screened or is on the clinical trial, their body reality, like all of our bodies are not going to survive one day. And, but our faith can. And that's where I kind of felt uniquely redirected to put my stake in the ground and camp on faith, because I've been uniquely positioned to be able to talk about things like this.
Well, I think there are two things that are in this part of your story that are really worth reinforcing for our listeners. And that's first this issue of faith. And faith is one of those things that if you have it, it's a great resource, and use it. If you don't have it, don't force it, because that won't be authentic and it's not going to end up being useful for you. There are other ways to get some of these benefits, you know, for people who are not people of faith. But if you do have faith, it is a wonderful avenue to use to help you build that resilience and that grit and that sense of hope and that sense of meaning, and all of those are really wrapped up in that. And so it's something that I encourage people to use if that's what they're predisposed to, you know. And but don't try to fake it, because faking it will not work.
Well, I think I've listened to several atheists. I mean, you know, Christopher Hitchens and Sam Harris, and you know, they talk about spirituality is a human capability. I mean, we can be spiritual without being religious.
Yeah, I am, you know, I'm not a religious person myself, but I have a deep and abiding sense of wonder at the universe. And I don't, you know, categorize it beyond that. But, you know, for me, science provides a window into that. When I'm digging into data and I suddenly see a pattern that reveals, you know, something that we hadn't seen before, that's almost a lens on the divine. That's really cool. The other thing that you haven't talked a lot about is yet that's related to this is religion as an institution. And there are a lot of really good things that the institution of religion can do. And I think maybe after this break, we can talk a little bit about that as we kind of wrap things up.
We all have challenges. Mine is multiple sclerosis. We each have this one life, and we didn't choose to be saddled with chronic illness. But there's a better way. So I choose to just jump. And you can too. It's your life. Live it well. ChronicCal.com.
This is Dr. Kevin Payne and Don Peterson and Danielle Ripley Burgess all together for one more segment here on the Chronic Life Podcast. We were talking about faith and about religion, and I just wanted to make one brief mention of the value of organized religion within people, because you know what we see historically from organized religion is there is no other institution that humans have developed that does a better job of providing meaning, structure, and shared resources and community for people. And so, you know, not only on the faith side, I'm sure on the organized religion side, on the church side, you found useful ways to use that resource in your own journey.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've been part of a church my whole life. I would encourage people, you say church, it's like almost as polarizing as saying a presidential candidate name. Like, So everybody has an opinion. Most people have a story of hurt. I will say I attest to both of those, that it can be a hurtful thing, but it's also a very valuable thing.
Yeah, and when it works really well. When it doesn't, ooh.
Yeah. But, you know, I've met a lot of church survivors, so to say. And I would just say keep pressing in, because I guarantee there's a community for you, whether it's meeting in a home, whether it's meeting in a big mega building. You know, I definitely encourage people not to walk away, because some of the best support I've gotten and some of the people who've helped me the most and make meaning and help my faith thrive have been from those communities. Absolutely.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the fact that you're a planner who has a hard time looking forward and planning.
I'm a planner who doesn't plan.
So that's
a really great description of me, Don.
That's got to be a little, I mean, it's got to create some tension, right? Internally, you're debating with yourself. Should I? No, maybe not. And I'm kind of the same way. I always have a plan, and I rarely stick to it. You know, I'm a visual learner, and I have to visualize something. Somebody comes to me with a business idea, and if I can't visualize it, I can't do it. You know, if I can't see it in my head, I can't paint the picture of it, I can't do it. And part of that is, so part of my makeup is I do need to be able to see that, but most of the time I'll rewrite the picture or change it before we ever get too deeply into it. And that's only because my brain doesn't shut off, and you know, there's always new things going on that most of it's crap. But some of it actually is worth listening to. In your case,
you have a podcast.
Well, that's why. And we've had to do 8 or 9 episodes. If I really was good at this, I could have capsulized it in one episode and we'd be done. That won't happen.
No, that's not going to happen.
Because, you know, because of these rambling, crazy stuff that goes through my head. But I mean, obviously we've talked a lot about what you've done and what you've been through. Let's look forward. What's next for you? I know you're working on your memoirs, right? You're writing your blog.
Right.
And I heard you say something about guest blogging.
Right.
So what else is going on in your life? I know, you know, as a mom and a wife, you're busy already. You have a lot of responsibilities. You do have your plan C days sometimes, right?
Right.
So in all of that, you're still finding ways to put one foot in front of the other and be productive and stay true to this purpose. So tell me how or what. What's going on in your life, and what's going on?
Are you asking for my 5-year plan?
I don't want to ask you. I'm afraid to ask you. Where do you see yourself in 5 years? I'm not going to ask that.
Alive? No, I can't use that.
I know, right?
Keep using that one.
That's a good
alive.
One.
Yeah, alive.
I feel like it's fair.
It's a good start.
Yeah. You know, I do have a plan. So in the next 3 weeks, I've actually told myself, Danielle, finish this memoir. I've been writing it for 18 years. I have had so many drafts, and I left my full-time position almost a year ago. to, you know, do freelance communications work, but focus on writing. And that's where I'd love to be. So, you know, I hope and pray for doors to open up. I'd love to get published. I feel like this is a leap of faith. I don't have a publishing contract lined up for me to finish it, but I just, again, feel this impulse to get this written, try and pitch it. If I can't find an editor, I might self-publish it and then get my book out there. I'd love to do more speaking, share my story, you know, inspire people going through it. I love to write, so getting more articles published, getting more opportunities to share my story, to help other people share their story. I love everything there is to storytelling, writing, being creative with words. So we'll see where that leads. That's my plan, in addition to being a wife and a mom and, you know, a baker, a aspiring baker.
Aspiring baker.
Ooh.
Yeah. I feel like...
And you
like
didn't bring muffins or something?
I've been working on my book.
Oh. It has, we'll have to have her back if she brings baked goods.
She's baking a book. Okay,
I'm baking up a book right now. Okay. But if you guys have me back, I will bake you some of my chocolate chip cookies. That's my favorite.
Oh,
see,
stop.
She just earned her way back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I did a little devotional around Christmas time, and I was writing my bio, and I love chocolate chip cookies so much. I actually put that into my printed bio. I just felt like it needed space.
See, in the holidays, I always make my Nana's homemade chicken noodles.
Ooh, that sounds good. Ooh.
I think you can hear your arteries harden.
I think we did a whole episode on that.
Yeah.
Glad to.
So I plan to keep writing. You know, I've found that writing is both healing and cathartic. It's also been very profitable for me. I mean, it's been a road that has opened a lot of doors for me to help.
So what's the message that you want people to take away from this?
Wow. Gosh, if somebody's listening to this, I just want them to know they're seen. I mean, I guess, you know, they're worthy, they matter, and I'm so sorry for what's happening to them. And if they can, like, look for the good today, because I guarantee if they open their hearts up to finding it, you know, if they open their hearts up to faith and hope and love, like, it will come, and to look for it.
I always think we have a choice between hope and fear. Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, that's kind of the way the world is organized. It's not good and evil for me. It's I think one of those big distinctions is we can choose hope or we can choose fear.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times fear chooses us if we're not paying attention.
Yeah.
Well, there's a TV show I was watching the other night. For those of you who have Showtime, it's called Billions, and it's fairly intellectually drama about finance on Wall Street and things like that. And the guy who plays the billionaire investor who is always in trouble with some adversary, and in this case, the scene the other night was a Russian oligarch who had invested money with him, and then they got screwed up, whatever.
Of course.
And but the line was, yes, you scared me. You scared me.
Mm-hmm.
But you didn't scare me off.
Mm.
And I think that's what you just said, right?
Yeah.
The fear side of it, I can be afraid.
Yeah.
But you won't scare me off. And this is your survivor story. Yeah, you were angry. You were upset. And you had every right to be.
Mm-hmm.
But you found a way to turn the corner on that and become positive about it. And I think that's what I find remarkable about your story. And you're so talented. It's not like you just write because, and I write because it's cathartic for me. Mm-hmm. I'm just not a very good writer. And you've made a living doing it, and you're really good at it. And I encourage you to please keep doing it, because not only is your writing style and your technical ability outstanding, but what you write about, I believe, and personally I've always been inspired by you as a person, but your writing really communicates that in a very effective way. So keep it up.
Well, real hope only happens in the face of legitimate fear.
Mm.
That's if you don't have anything to really be afraid of, that's not real hope.
Yeah. So I always think science and faith do go hand in hand. And I always think something as simple as a sunrise, where it's been dark all night long, but every day the sunlight will break through. Like every single day. And, you know, if somebody else can't find it inside of yourself, nobody's around, or you have no faith, like, just look outside around 5 or 6 in the morning, and every single day without question, that sunrise will come. And I believe that's a really great metaphor for our lives.
I love that. I'm naturally a night person. About 20 years ago, I made myself become a morning person. So I now get up before the sunrise. And I go out on the deck on every day I can with my laptop, and I write to the sunrise.
Incredible.
Thank you for being a sunrise with us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for being here. This has been the most fun ever, really.
This has been the Chronic Life Podcast, where we live life well. Join the conversation on social media at Chronic Life Pod or at chroniclifepodcast.com.